Welcome to HQAF Radio. My name's Francis. And you're listening to a show about two best friends.
Welcome back, folks. Welcome, folks, to this...
Yeah, where are we welcoming back from?
You never started it.
Oh, God.
did you have a
redo?
Have you been secretly recording
this? There's no redo. Okay, hold on. You guys missed the whole point where there's like the intro that's already pre-recorded. It's already pre-recorded.
Yeah, it's but like, you guys, like, there's no like break between the pre-recording and the interview.
Welcome back, everybody, audience, to HQAF Radio. Today is a very special episode, as you can probably tell. Today, I've got my sister Donica with me.
Woo!
And our third co-host, Catherine.
I do not accept this title. I'm only special guest.
You are only the audience, actually.
You are the listener. Audience.
We found out that I am not the only audience member.
There's someone in Canada. Shout out to Canada.
Yeah.
And Chris Olson.
Hello.
Ooh, I like how you do cool.
Yeah, I know.
We're
name, just like look of Alexandria.
This is the...
My birth date is...
beep!
What's your social security number?
Yeah. Francis did ask me what my dad's middle name was today, so...
So this is a super special episode because finally Donica and Catherine get to meet each other in person.
True love.
We've met digitally.
They've met over Animal Crossing. They've met...
one does
over Jackbox.
Over Jackbox. But now they meet personally... And I say this is special because the first time I think Catherine had heard of Donica was through my Munich interview with Donica.
Oh, what's it in Munich?
The Munich interview where I talk specifically about your skipping.
No, that was not about my skipping at
yes,
that
it was.
No, and you know what? I thought the same thing you did, but I was just like, yeah, there was a lot that you opened up about your skipping. And I
it's
just
a big part of my life.
I really needed to know. It was an open secret. But... Catherine was like, there's so much more to Donica than just her skipping.
Yes.
I wanted
Thank
to,
you for seeing
like,
me.
You're welcome.
I wanted to know about the robotics. I wanted to know about like her life in Europe. And I was like, but that's not what I wanted to know about. I've known about it for my entire life.
It's been a part of the thump. The soundtrack to my life.
Mm.
So this is the interview where Catherine actually gets to fill in those questions that I never got to ask. That I never,
he never wanted to ask.
Was never interested in asking.
But can I first ask Chris, since Donica's been staying with us for the past week, what has your experience been like with Donica skipping?
Basically daily, I will hear, yes. Yes.
It is a thing.
I will, I will be in my office nook, which is admittedly not an office.
It's the kitchen.
And
let's be clear.
It is an extension of the kitchen. And then I will hear from either the dining room, which we are currently positioned in, or the living room. And I will hear, cocoon, and I will hear heavy breathing and a thumping sound. Mostly the breathing, actually, that we'll hear. And then I'll usually message and be like, is Donica downstairs skipping?
Why is she here?
But you don't message Donica.
Well, I don't have Donica's team's name on
He
my
has
computer.
My phone number, though.
Donica doesn't check her phone, so it would be moot. Honestly, it's mostly humorous at this point because...
We're used to it.
It's been going on for a while.
Well, and what's funny is, like, recently, so this past Thursday, Friday, I've been working downstairs. Like, on the first floor, because I'm usually on the upstairs. And so now that's limited Donica's space that she can skip. So if I'm in the dining room, she'll just skip in the living room. And if I'm in the living room, she'll just skip here in the
dining room. It's
but
so
between,
little
yeah.
space.
Between me and Chris...
I don't want to extend the skipping narrative. However, does it have to be inside?
It could be outside.
There's an alley that's very spacious that you should just head out.
It's true.
Okay, so Chris and Catherine, what do you think when you say pacing?
Well, we've heard skipping and pacing, so I feel like it's a very heavy kind of lilting footstep.
In a wider space, sure.
Can I do a demonstration?
Yes. Oh my God, yes.
You little bitch.
Donica will do this.
Donica.
That is not what she does.
I've never done that here.
If Chris and I were not in the house, she would be.
Made it seem like that's what you saw when you were working.
No, that is not what we see. It's kind of funny because normally Francis will work upstairs, and so Donica and I are down here. And so Donica's usually in the living room. I'm usually at my desk. And every time I go upstairs, though, I have to go past Donica. And I feel like I'm interrupting something. And she's always like, oh, you caught me. And she always stops because she's listening to headphones. She's like deep in thought. And then I interrupt it and she's like, and I'm like, and so we like have this standoff. And I'm like, and so then she's like, you caught me. And I was like, it's okay. I didn't see anything. Yeah. And so then we continue on our way. And then we forget that we saw each other. And it's
we
like
don't
this,
forget. I always remember.
Oh, yeah. No, I always remember, too. But it's this delicate dance that Donica and I, like, dance to.
Sorry, this sounds like you watched her masturbate or something.
Yeah, no, it sounds like you walked into her while she was coming out of the shower.
That's what I feel, because I get the sense that Donica uses this time to think really deeply. And so when I interrupt that by walking through her skipping space, her pacing space, I'm like interrupting her thought and she gets so disoriented almost, like you caught me like out of body experience.
But wait, so Donica, what do you call it?
Skipping, because I think that's what they've always called it.
In your head, what is it?
It's like a time to think. And okay, so that's just it. Oftentimes, I think especially for instance, if I've been at a party with friends, and I just get home, it could be 3 o'clock in the morning and I would still need to do it because it's this pent up energy that just needs to go.
Are you an extrovert or an introvert?
Introvert.
Oh, so that's introvert. So interesting. So you come back from parties and have too much energy and you're an introvert.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like when I'm there, it already feels like it's tiring in a different sense. Like I have to be on in a different sense. But I get back and I didn't get enough time for me. I didn't get enough time for what I need. So I need to go ahead and get that out. And to answer this other question, why don't I just do it outside? I guess I could do it in the garden. That would be fair. But if I were to do it on the sidewalk, which I could do. Like I used to, when I would go for runs around here, I would go on a walk afterwards for a bit to cool down. In running clothes, that's fine. In my pajamas, that's a different thing. I feel like I would need to change into real clothes, put on my shoes, and then go for a walk.
I totally understand. I'm deterred by a lot of things by having to get out of my pajamas.
Exactly. Thank you.
Also, when I hear about this and when I saw the demonstration, it feels like meditation.
My roommate in junior year, she also did the same thing. I remember coming home and she was just walking around. We just look at each other in that same way, like deer in headlights. What are you doing? It's like,
what are you doing?
Yeah, it's like, I
wish.
Because that's more normal.
No, this guy that I was telling you about, that he just gets up in the middle of the night when he's thinking out a problem and he just starts walking. Mm. And I commented on it, and that's how we started talking originally.
That sounds like a habit of geniuses, honestly, who literally cannot handle the current worldly experiences to deal with problems. So, like, you must go to some other space to handle them.
Well, it's like the movie Soul.
Yep.
Not to turn this conversation to your skipping, that's just one aspect. But
we've
aspect.
Are we still in the intro?
Yeah, Francis is like, and dun dun dun. Thanks for coming.
This is all getting cut out.
No, this is all part of it. I did want validation that it wasn't just me.
I feel like with Donica, it was like going straight to a very specific quirk versus all these other things that make Donica Donica. It was like...
But this is also instrumental to Donica's being, because Donica is brilliant. She is incredibly smart.
Yeah.
She is creative, and she's idiosyncratic.
And well, idiosyncratic, I agree
well,
with.
And,
yeah.
And so the thing is, at the time of the interview, I knew this. Yeah. So for Danica to speak openly about her skipping was like, because
we've
new
never
thing.
Talked about it. And we've I feel never, like it's.
We've never talked about it. It's just an open secret in our family.
I feel like it's been something that I've done since we lived in Washington State.
Which is very young. Yeah. For
very
Danica.
Young, yeah. We moved from Washington when I was 7.
Okay. So if you feel like if you didn't skip, something bad would happen?
I don't feel like something bad would happen because it's been the case where I haven't been able to do it for a month or for even longer. But it feels like I just have this pent up energy that needs to go somewhere.
So
like
I know it's not OCD then.
Thank you. Thank you. I wonder about that sometimes. But I feel like a dog. Like they say, if you don't exercise your dog, they begin to behave badly.
Yeah, yeah,
I feel like a dog in that way.
Now that you say it, I remember the house in Washington. We had the living room and then a section and then the hallway. And Danica would always like skip
back and forth
in the hallway.
Yeah.
And that was just her thing.
Yeah, I know. I remember like, there being a long rug and then the couch, this leather couch, and I would go back and forth between them.
Yeah.
But you know what's missing from the story is Danica's excellent shoe wear choice.
In the house, she wore nothing.
That's
because
true.
Because we are Asian. Remember, we are Asian.
Her pacing, yeah. She wears nothing. But
it's most comfortable in
So maybe that's another reason why you don't do it outside. Because inside it's easier on the feet.
No, but honestly, I do feel like I do in some ways do it outside. There will be times when I come home from work, it's been a long day, and I need extra time just to think. And I will go on my bike and I will do an extra circuit around our neighborhood on my bicycle and then come in and put my bike away.
Yeah, I actually very much understand this. So, not skipping because that's really hard on my legs, but...
So I know we started off saying that we didn't want to talk about skipping, but now we talk
and
about skipping.
And 25 minutes later.
So, Catherine, you had prepared some questions for Danica.
Yeah, when Francis and Chris invited me over for dinner, they were like, oh, if you want, you can prepare questions. I was like, if I want? I have not wanted to do anything more. / I already have a bunch of questions for the person I'm here. So, what made you choose this program in the Netherlands? Why go there? Why do this?
So, I think a big part of it is in the Netherlands, you're treated more like a human. When I was in California, in the Palo Alto area, my mentors were people who had gone to Stanford. And listening to their stories, being graduate students, having to teach swimming, having to tutor kids, you're at one of the top engineering schools in the world, and you still do not make enough to live. And you're one of these brilliant people. If you just went into industry, you would be fine. You would be making hundreds of thousands. You would be in the top, 15, 10% of the U.S. population. Instead, you choose to pursue this.
Maybe start from the beginning.
Yeah, what is this?
So you went to undergraduate, and you studied...
engineering, science, mechanics, with a specialty in biomechanics.
Okay. And then you went to Philly, right?
Where I was a neuroscientist.
Then you followed this particular study over into New York City.
Right, because she basically told me either you can come with me to New York City or I can write you a recommendation about a month or two after I had just started that job and was like, okay, no, I don't want to apply for new jobs. So.
And is this the one where you helped a coworker negotiate a higher salary?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That's a very important story to me in Danica lore.
And the coworker was a male.
Yeah, the coworker's a male, yeah.
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 Hey,
yeah.
We can all be taken advantage of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so Danica did go to New York, but then after New York, you had a couple of internships in California.
No. After New York, I was in the Netherlands, but I had an internship during that time in California.
Why did you choose the Netherlands?
For my PhD.
Yeah.
Or even your master's.
Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't know that you've been there for 2 academic programs.
Mm. So with my master's, I looked into my area of research. And I saw that the particular school that I went to is the 2nd best in the world after MIT. In terms of research output, the kinds of innovative things they're doing, 2nd in the world behind MIT.
Is that because of stem cell research by any chance?
It's not, surprisingly. They do have some, I don't know, stem cell research, but biological, biotech kind of research. In this case, it's purely focusing on the robotics aspect.
Okay.
But the group at MIT is actually not part of MIT's normal cohort. They're part of the media lab. So you apply to the professor specifically instead of to the mechanical engineering department, for instance.
For master's or PhD?
For both.
Oh, okay.
And at the time, they weren't looking for master's.
What? A master's program was like, no, thank you. We don't want your money?
Yeah. Yeah.
Unheard of.
The media lab at MIT is different because they pay for you to be there. They give you a stipend.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So at the time, I was just like, okay, well, the second best program, and one that I did my bachelor's research off of work from this university, it's in the Netherlands, and why not go to the Netherlands? It costs the same as going to an American university, so.
Maybe even less, I feel like.
I think about the same at the end. For international students, yeah, it's quite a lot.
I was going to say, for the amount of work that you had to do, for the amount of cultural level setting she had to do.
I think a lot of people think it's cheaper, but if you think about what you spend in terms of housing, what you spend in terms of any kind of services, in terms of dorms or
food. And they
don't
stipend any of that?
No. I come from the U.S. If I came from a third world country, that's a different thing.
But, oh, okay. Interesting.
I think the one thing I remember the most before Danica went was her talking about the Dutch and how the Dutch were open people, but they were just kind of plain people, but then she was
also true. They pride themselves on it.
But this was just part of her travel book.
They got me a book about it. What is it, like The Idiot's Guide to the Dutch or something like that?
But the thing is, they don't talk about the experience that she would have as an American person of color in the Netherlands. And afterwards, I would hear about her experience moving forward, and it's so much more different than you would expect, especially like from the books, which I think are probably taken from a white person's point of view.
This is why we need to have more editors of color.
exactly. And so it's very interesting that she's there now, because now she can speak from an American person of color's point of view on her experience over there.
Which I feel like, instead of just saying an American person of color, you could just say an American, because most of America is people of color.
So when I came back during COVID, I thought, okay, I'm not really supposed to be out, but I need to get groceries. My roommate's not here and I'm going to starve to death otherwise. So I'll just wear a mask when I go to the grocery stores at a time when no one else was wearing a mask. No one looked twice at me. But in one of my Dutch courses, there was a white American boy who lives in the very same neighborhood that I live in. So he would have been going to the same grocery store. And he was saying, oh yeah, wasn't it so weird? I felt like everyone was staring at me. And I go, no, actually, I didn't get the same experience. I get the feeling that when they saw me, it's like, oh, it's just another Asian person wearing a mask, of course. Whereas for him, it's a white guy wearing a mask, so it looks very strange. Why are you wearing a mask?
Which is that it was like negative, positive, or neutral?
In that case, I think it was neutral. But there are many cases where I've encountered other people who will say things, oh, but where are you from? But where are you really from? Or they'll say things like, oh, but you're not really American. Oh, but you're not really Asian. And in the U.S., I think it's understood that those kind of things are not okay to say. Or there are at least people in the U.S. who will say that that's not okay to say to someone. In the Netherlands, I don't think it would occur to anyone that that's really not something you should be saying.
So this is part of that, like, plain speak, I guess,
very blunt. Yeah, like, they'll just say it out. But it doesn't occur to them that maybe this is something that's very othering, is a good way to put it. You know, it's like, well, obviously you're not American because your parents are not American, and your parents' parents are not American, and they don't see it as problematic in a way, as some Americans would see it here.
Yeah. What is that figure for Christmas where they dress up in blackface?
Wasn't this year the first year that they were like, oh, I don't think we should do it?
Yeah, this year was the first year after the Black Lives Matter stuff.
They stopped?
They've said that it's not okay. I think they've switched to Rainbow Pete.
Oh, hell. Oh, man.
Gay
Pete? Yeah.
I know Gay Pete.
Yeah, Gay Pete.
He's the Secretary of Transportation.
This is great.
I think this is Pete.
I'm sorry, was that a Pete food? Amazing.
Thank you.
This is how far we've come.
but it's not the first time this has come up in conversation in the Netherlands. But I think oftentimes they think, oh, you're the minority. You're one person who's saying that this is causing issues for you. This is not the case. Oh, but this is a tradition. Mm. I think that's the big thing. This is a tradition. Mm. Yeah, they've finally seen that maybe this is problematic for people who are not white Dutch. And maybe this is something we should change.
Also, if you're exhausted by talking about these things, again, we don't have to talk.
Well, I mean, I was there because I'm being treated like a human.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said I'm being treated like a human, but I'm also othered all the time.
So I'm being treated in a human in that they give me more than a month of vacation time.
Yeah, that's all I want. I told you to stop bragging to me about why it hurts my feelings.
I just want to go to Malta for like a month.
Actually, so I wanted to say, apparently there's this huge divide in the U.S. with mm-hmm. grad school programs where some are unionized and some are not. Mm-hmm. And the unionized grad school programs, they can actually focus on their studies. And the not unionized ones, they have to do these things where you said, like, teach swim lessons and whatever. And I think it's, like, something that we should really start paying attention to. As people who vote, et cetera. Like, unions have been demonized in the U.S., but it actually gives people a good chance to live while they're studying or whatever, or maybe don't have a PhD year, who knows. So how did you choose this line of work?
This line of work?
Huh. Or actually, I feel like I don't even know if you would call it a line of work. And I already asked this, but what is it that you do with robotics?
Okay. So I guess to clarify for the people out there, I work specifically in soft robots. So robots that are made from soft materials.
What?
Think it's very much not like hard jeans and soft jeans.
Hard pants and soft pants. Exactly. Which is a very important distinction
we have to make. So most robots that we think of, they're made of metal and they're hard. So that means that mm-hmm. in normal environments, in a factory or in your home, they're not safe to work around because if they run into you suddenly, you're going to be hit with this hard metal thing. Mm. But this also means that they're not really great for environments where we really don't know what we're going to run into. So for instance, on Mars, deep sea, in a cave, right? So I'm trying to make robots that are made out of things that are much softer, like plastic.
Okay.
Right. So that instead of damaging the environment or damaging the things that are around it, it can form so that it's better able to adapt to uncertainty in the environment, better able to adapt to humans in its environment. It's safer to work around. It's also much more durable. So for instance, there are soft robots that get run over by trucks and they're still able to continue moving.
So what is it about this that like really ignites your passion? Like, that has made you dedicate this decade of your life to it.
Oh man, when you say a decade, that feels really like
it's true, right? Though, right? I did a quick math in my head.
When Danica was skipping back and forth, she was really thinking about the people that might not have the opportunity to skip.
Like I might skip. I mean, that's kind of
it. That is so rude, Princess.
This is why we're siblings.
I really thought you were giving an earnest answer, and then you just gave the rudest answer.
I honestly don't know, though.
You need a tough skin to work in our family.
That would be very interesting. Please tell us.
So my primary area of interest is rehabilitation robotics. So it's for people who maybe are missing a limb or have... who don't move in the same way that we move, who can use robotics to bring their functioning up to what we consider normal or average, or in some ways even making what's average into something exceptional, something different.
As somebody that's watched your career progress, I feel like part of your trajectory started with working at this lab where you worked with stroke patients and you were helping them trying to figure out how to gain mobility in their limbs, right? And then it just evolved into where you're at now.
Well, I will say even beforehand, my bachelor's thesis was on snowboarders, but the research that we did besides that was on the elderly. So, of course, they have also reduced mobility. But that's essentially it. I want to help people live full lives. And I think as people who are young, who are able-bodied, we take that for granted that we can easily go about our lives, like meet someone for coffee and just go on for a walk. And we take for granted how much that actually contributes to the quality of life that we live.
Yeah, I was telling you earlier about how I temporarily had limited mobility and how shocked I was. Like, my work asked me to come in, and I was like, I can't sit on the toilet at this place. I can't go to the bathroom in this office. No, I'm not coming in. I can't walk a block on crutches without being exhausted for the whole rest of the day. So I totally understand this, where it's like, as people who you never really know what it is until it happens or until you like you're
you don't think about it.
Yeah, like you're just in such a privileged place until it's like, oh, this is actually really so hard. And I was like so exhausted that I couldn't do any of the extra things, and that was really hard for me to understand that I'm limited. I'm used to doing all these other things, but I'm so limited because I'm so tired, like physically and mentally tired from trying to figure out how to navigate in the world.
Yeah, but it's not just extra things. So a friend of mine, the one that I'm starting the consultancy with, she has a congenital hip dislocation. So sometimes she wakes up in the morning in pain, and she's in pain for hours. And so you and I might work from 9 to 5, and for most employers that's okay, and you know that's when we're expected to work. But for her to get up before 9 to get ready for work and to be there is really difficult. It's really, you know, this marathon for her because, you know, she wakes up at 7 and she's in pain. And I mean, what do you do when you wake up in pain? Do you reach for aspirin? You don't want to have to rely on aspirin, ibuprofen, painkillers to get through your day. And that's just to get up in the morning.
Yeah, I should say extra things is beyond getting up and staying alive through the day, which is barely what I was functional
at. The bare minimum.
Yeah. Like, I took a long time off work. Like, so for somebody who, like, does, I wouldn't even say normal, who does, like, all these, checks off all these boxes during the day and has, like, a mobility issue, is just unfathomable to me. And does it every day for years. Like, I can't understand it.
I don't think I 100% fully comprehended how much it affects our quality of life until I met a person who, you know, he's relatively young for a man who had had a stroke. And he was so active. He coached his son's basketball team. He went on runs. He's not the type of person you would expect to have a stroke. But then when he had it, he realized he was confined to his home. He couldn't go and see his friends. Right. He couldn't coach his basketball team as before because he would be pacing up and down on the court. And now he can't do it because he cannot walk as easily. I don't think we realize how much it affects us when one of our legs or both of our legs don't work as we want them to work.
I also think there's like a way bigger discussion that we could talk about, but not right now, which is, like, understanding limited mobility also relates to, like, addiction issues, like, mental health issues. If we understand that all of these things are things that people struggle with and it makes living hard, it makes us all better people.
Yeah, more empathetic, much more human humans.
Yes. Which is very funny since you're working on, like, inhumane.
Making people extra more human. Than human. Yeah, extra human. Yeah. But I think that's a big reason for it. And I think also, so when we moved to the Virginia area, we actually had moved from Fort Leonard Wood, which...
In Missouri.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. You know it. Oh my God. Goodness.
There's a lot of basic training that happens there.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I'm from the South, so a lot of my friends went there.
But there's a lot of basic training that goes on there. So there are a lot of young men and women who are very able-bodied, who are doing, you know, like, pushing themselves to their physical limits. Mm-hmm. And I remember at one point, I think it was Walter Reed, not Bethesda. Right? I think we were at Walter Reed And seeing for maybe the first time in my life someone who had an amputation, but going from this place where people are very, virile, I guess is one way to put it, very active.
At the peak of their physical fitness.
When you say viral.
Viral. But you see them, they're there. You see them out on these monkey bars, you see them out running when we were kids.
Right? Yeah.
To a place like Walter Reed. I don't know if it was Walter Reed or Bethesda.
Walter Reed moved to Bethesda, actually.
No, but I remember going to the hospital. And it was a time when Walter Reed and Bethesda were two separate hospitals. And seeing someone who does not have this capability, someone who has a missing limb, and being like, oh my God, wait, what is that? Why are they missing this limb? What is this? I think it was a very jarring experience for me as a child.
That's actually, like, so, like, this is incredible to hear about, that you saw this as a child, and instead of being scared or traumatized, it imprinted on you later to be like, oh, I'm learning about robotics, and this is something that can help these people that have this space in my mind. Like, that's actually just so cool. Francis, I can't believe you never asked this question. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to do this.
But Donica, why do you skip so much?
In my dissertation, I'm not going to thank him. I'm going to thank Catherine.
Donica, why can't you do karaoke as good as Francis?
Francis is just uninhibited, and he's like drunk half the time.
That's not one of my questions. Actually, the tone is perfect on this.
Wait, what the viewers cannot see, or the listeners cannot see, is Chris is like, oh my God, I married this man.
He knows.
I feel like there have been several times this week when Chris is like, oh, shit, man, I chose to marry into this family. It's not like I was born into this.
It was the first time when he watched you skipping into the room.
The first time you guys locked eyes.
Oh, shit.
Donica, did you tell Catherine already about your NGO business?
Yes. No, I have not. I say yes as in like, oh my God, yes, we need to talk about it. My friends and I are starting a diversity and inclusivity business. So originally it was going to be an NGO, and then someone pointed out, no, this is really a big thing that needs to happen in Europe. You can get in on the ground floor. You should be a consultancy charging for this.
Yes.
So we're opening a consultancy, which has an NGO branch that focuses on diversity and inclusivity for people with disabilities.
Her friend has a disability.
The thing is, the reason what pushed us to going from NGO to consultancy is because she was taking a marketing and positioning course, and she met someone who was like, hey, you'd be perfect for this one thing. You should join us. This will be your first client, but you need to charge. This is not something you can do for free.
I agree that you should be getting all the money for all this stuff. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
However you can. That's just called, like, making up for lost time.
Yeah, and I think especially in Europe, it's something that the conversation is really nascent. Not like here, where it's a bit more evolved.
I mean, here is bad, but it's worse in Europe. So my company is owned by a German company.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so the German company has the main HR. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about all these big issues, like big systemic American issues, but like nothing is coming down because in Germany, they're like, well, we have 50% of women on the board. We don't know. We couldn't even have equality racially in our workforce because there's just not that many people. But I was like, I've had temporary limited mobility because I had knee surgery, and I've been in Europe during that time, and it was really effing hard. There's so many things that they don't think about.
Yeah. I think it's a lot like a zit. So here, because we...
Did you just say zit?
Like a pimple. Like a pimple.
Yeah.
Because here, we see it, and we're confronted with it every single day. You get on the train, and you see people who maybe have a movement disability, who are Black or Hispanic or Asian, people who don't look like you.
Yeah.
Whereas in Europe, you're not really confronted every single day with people who don't look like you. It's very homogenous compared to here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think because of that, like, just statistically speaking, we are more likely to run into issues, so we can address them head on. We see these problems, so we can deal with them. In Europe, it's not that they don't have these problems, it's that they're under the skin, so yeah, like, you can't
the minority really is the minority.
Yeah.
I think, like, white people are now officially, like, a minority, but also, it's problematic to talk about white people as, like, a monolith or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, in Europe, it's like, oh, we're all just Germans or whatever. Even the Turkish people are Germans, but it's like, but you still don't hire them. Like, you don't hire the Africans. You stopped refugees coming in. Like, why don't
there's
you
a big
that?
Difference between health outcomes versus different populations in these countries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Scotland, when I had my knee surgery, I couldn't get around, and so I called ahead to all these places because Scotland has like a lot of steep hills.
Oh yeah, like Lisbon.
And I was like, oh, you know, I can't climb to the top of Edinburgh Castle, but it says online, which was very easy to find, like so much easier than in the U.S. It says you have this thing like that I could do. And they're like, oh, yeah, hon, just do this or whatever. And so I show up to the front and we're like, oh, I actually need assisted services to get to the top. And the guy looks me up and down and was like, do you? And I was like, yeah, actually, like, I barely made it here. So, like, a lady in a car came and drove us, and she was like, this is how the Queen gets to the top of Edinburgh Castle. And I was like, oh.
Thank you for treating
us. I've always known that I'm a queen.
Yeah. Well, thank you for recognizing.
It was, like, equal parts, like, still the same thing of, like, people being like, you don't look disabled.
Yeah.
But also, it was a bit easier to find, but not always. Just, like, the government ones were much easier.
Yeah. I think in Europe, because my one friend who is doing this consultancy with us, she has this congenital movement disability. She was telling us, in Europe, they don't have this equivalent of ADA. If you go to the Netherlands, for instance, you have all these houses where the stairs are so steep.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even recognize that they're steep. They just think, oh, these are normal stairs. No, no, guys, these are not normal stairs.
No,
these are super
steep
stairs.
They're very steep.
And the idea of having elevators or ramps, mm-hmm. it's like, what do you mean? Why would we need those?
So we're having to call places and be like, do you have an elevator?
Yeah.
Donica, do you feel bad about stealing all of Francis's Club Penguin points?
What? What are these Club Penguin
points? Neopoint.
Neopet.
He always brings this up, but no.
He didn't bring it up.
True. My sister and I don't remember this. Fake news. We call fake news.
Oh,
I remember this very vividly.
So he is basically saying that my sister and I were hackers before there were hackers.
Not even hackers. I might have forgotten my password and typed it in somewhere weird, and you guys took my password.
But let us remember, Francis has really effing strange passwords.
No, it was a great password. I mean, it was the best password.
Wow, that was very Trumpian.
Sounds very familiar.
It's a huge password.
But the point is, at the end of the week, you had stolen all of my Neo points, and you had not admitted to it.
Two out of three Tan siblings say that this story did not happen.
Because two of the three of them stole it.
Yeah, hold on. Some collusion. Also, like, did you have more points than you should have at the end of the week?
I don't recall this.
In terms of digital pets,
what I will admit to is giving away his Tamagotchi when I was fooled by another girl on the playground who said that he said that she could have it, and it was not true.
Wow, so you're blaming this other girl on the playground.
No,
okay.
I will say, for the Tamagotchi
so
issue, that was my fault.
Pets came
for the
around,
Neopets, I think that this is a made up.
No.
No one but him remembers
it. It was
this.
So specific. You know what? I believe Francis.
Yeah, I actually believe Francis on this one. Like, it is very specific in how he felt harmed.
You hear the hurt.
Sister 1 and Sister 2 do not recall this.
Yeah, because
story.
You benefited from it.
What is the negative part, like, Francis admitting that someone stole his Neopet?
And the harshest part was, like, it was a slow burn. I was, like a few hundred thousand, and it kept going down.
Oh,
kept going down, but it wasn't until it went down to, like, 10,000s that I was like, what the fuck is going on? And at that point, it was too late.
Wait, but let us also recall the internet at this time. Right? This isn't like I'm over here on my computer in my bedroom in the dark masturbating to porn kind of internet. This is like
as I'm it is in- now.
Yeah, okay. Now we know what we're doing in the guest bedroom.
Yeah. So
this is
got
like
it. That's why we don't have any bandwidth in this place anymore.
But this is like I'm in the living room. If someone wants to make a phone call, they have to kick me off the internet. And I'm out in the open. So he's accusing us of stealing his nail points at a time when we would be out in the open.
Or so maybe it was the fact that you didn't understand what you were stealing and you just logged into his nail points account and you were like spending his nail points
you
without
were
realizing
points.
You were spending
maybe
his nail
yours.
Points.
Do you also think that an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old are sophisticated enough to pull off this crime?
Okay, so hold on. Context here. I was in 7th grade. I remember
seventh
this.
7th grade.
7th, so you must have been in 5th.
Yeah,
5th.
That's
third.
10 and
5,
8.
Yeah, 5th grade.
Okay, so later in our time,
and
sorry.
You wouldn't have been able to just use it on my account. It wasn't used. It was transferred out.
Ooh. How do you transfer on Neopets, though?
You can.
I feel like I need to log back on and remember these things. You know, like, oh, wait, yes, I did steal it.
I like how my question that's was, okay. Do you feel bad? And you said, I don't recall.
Well, the answer is no.
No, but that's the thing. He recalls his life.
Decidedly.
About once a month, I feel bad for him.
He recalls this slight, but myself and my sister do
it's
not,
not
recall
a slight.
It.
I know.
This was a fool. This...
This is a robbery.
This crime.
I know. I
spent months.
I worked so hard. I worked so hard. Okay.
I think the reason why I feel
okay.
so deeply.
But the difference is, like, he had time to feel hard because he never had to do any of the dishes. He never had to do any of
the
cooking.
Roll the lumpia.
Okay, first off, fifth grade Donica, third grade Alex did not do that.
I don't
this
know
is
if they had nimble fingers.
No,
but
this
also,
is not true. I was already... like shelling coconut things at that age.
I also spent very much a lot of time playing a snake game, like a Neopets snake game.
Oh yeah, I remember, like
Neo
with the meerkat thing.
Yeah, meerkats or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're called.
I remember.
But I did a lot of time playing those games to earn my points. That's why I felt so.
While your sisters were in the kitchen.
But the thing
it's
is,
true.
Like,
it's true.
Like I remember exactly where the computer was at this time,
mm-hmm.
and there's no way we could have done it in secret.
Like, maybe
it was out in the
open. But I feel like you still did it.
Yeah, that is
but
possible.
It's, like, literally out in the open, and in order for us to be on the internet, like, if our mom wanted to use the phone, she had to kick us off. You know, it was that age
so
of
that's
the internet.
Why it
was like,
took months to transfer the points, is because you kept getting kicked off by the dial-up.
It was the slow, it was
the
slow,
burn.
It was the slow burn.
Wait. But then... I would not admit to this because I don't recall it. I really don't recall it. Do you recall leaving me to drown when we were the same age?
I didn't.
Counterfactual.
I didn't leave you to drown, but I did. I do remember the incident. I didn't leave you to drown. I didn't know how to swim.
You knew how to swim at
Francis
that point.
Francis still does not
already,
know how to swim.
He had already taken swimming lessons. He was not a great swimmer, but he could swim.
This
he left me clinging to lily pads
okay.
as I'm suffering and calling for help.
Okay, this is all getting cut out, but let's go back down.
Okay,
but,
so
when it's not about Neopets.
My sister is, I guess, like 3.5 years younger than I am. And me and my cousins were swimming in my grandparents' pool.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a cousin who's like roughly my age, and she told my sister, like, oh, get on my back, I'll swim you out to the deep end and swim you back. But this cousin... is not a good person. So they swim her out. They're like, this is hard. Dump this baby like into the deep end.
Oh, no.
And then swims to the side. And I see my little baby sister, who I didn't even really like, drowning. And I was like, I gotta save her. So like, I had just no swimming training. And I swim over. I like pull her to the side. And to this day, she says, that's why I'll never let her forget that I saved her life. And I was like, that's for damn sure. Like, I bring this up, like, once a quarter.
When she forgets it.
Yeah, like, oh, forgets. You think I'm being mean to you? Remember that time I didn't know how to swim and I saved your life?
No, but that, I mean, that's one of those things. I know Francis loves me. He's not going to leave me to die. He's just going to accuse me of stealing his Neo coins or whatever they are. Right? My parents love to tell this one story when we were in Hawaii, when my mom stepped out for sugar or whatever mother stepped out for. Sugar. Right? So I'm a baby. I'm in a crib and Francis is three. Yeah, because you're 2.5 years older than I am.
3, 5, I don't remember.
You were definitely not.
So are you?
Well, I was in kindergarten in Hawaii, so
you could have been four.
Could have been four.
Four.
Or five.
So Francis is a toddler, and my mom has stepped out, and he basically freaks out, like, "Oh my God, we've been abandoned!" So he
that is a very young age to be left alone.
He doesn't have all this confidence.
Francis has had abandonment issues from day one. It's
that's fair. It sounds like it's very fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
So apparently, according to them, he takes me out of the crib, a four-year-old, and when my mom comes back, he's just sitting there crying, holding me, saying like, "Oh my God, why would you leave us? Don't abandon us again."
Hey, that's a very nurturing instinct.
Yeah.
I'm a great person.
Okay, the other story my sister doesn't want me to tell is that we were playing hide and seek one time and I folded her into the hide of bed, which would definitely have smelled.
Oh my God.
I did not know. I just was like, this is a great hiding place, get in here.
Yeah.
And then my mom came out and she was like, "Where's your sister?" As I was like trying to pull her out. I was like, so like I saved her and also was very close to me. But I never stole her Neopets.
That's a different
thing. I never committed that sin.
That's basically like stealing their bitcoins.
We would never know how valuable those things are now because he didn't have the chance.
I know, I could have bought so many things for my Neopets.
So I have another question, which is, what is your favorite episode of HQAF that I've been on?
That you've been on?
Wow. Did Alana write that question?
I did channel Alana's spirit because she is, you know, always guiding me.
Now I feel attacked. I didn't realize until recently that you can actually listen to them on Spotify.
Wow, that answer is crazy.
I feel attacked.
Also, listen to HQAF on Spotify. Thank you,
everyone. Knew this, Francis.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So I don't think Donica's actually listened to a podcast that
it's
you've been on.
It's fairly new.
No, I haven't.
Donica hasn't even listened. She just participates in the podcast.
This is true.
And then just lets me publish it.
There is a relevant story around this that's recent. Where we're like, "Oh, have you listened to any HQAF episodes recently?" And we said, "Oh, why don't you listen to the one from our wedding?" Which was,
oh my God, it was
over
so
like two
funny.
And a half years ago. And so we started listening to it, and she's like, "Who's on this podcast?" And we're like, "Oh, Alana interviewed a number of our wedding guests.
Greg and Taylor.
Greg and Taylor." Like, we really wanted to listen to Greg and Taylor because they were so drunk. It was very funny. And then Alana goes, "And then now we're here with Donica, Francis' sister." And Donica was like, "I was on this podcast?"
I don't recall this. Oh, maybe I did.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, so Donica gave some nice commentary, and it was actually a delightful episode. We learned a lot about their parents, and
at the end of our segment, Donica was like, "I don't remember this."
Yeah. I don't remember
giving
that.
No, at the end of this segment, I don't know about that segment there. Maybe it's for the best, right? Because I don't follow social media as widely. It doesn't weigh on my conscience like it does other people.
This isn't social media. This is just subscribing
this
to a podcast.
This is podcasts.
It's on the internet.
See,
this is your brother's life.
It's like, when people are like, "I don't participate in social media," it's like, so you don't participate in society? Because, like, so many things happen on social media now.
This
like,
is true.
I appreciate, like a step away from it, but it's like, still, you have to engage with culture, right?
In a sense, right? So my current roommate is Gen Z. Like, she's 23. You know, we go out and we do things that are like fun and interesting, and she has to take a million different photos of this. And this is not a negative criticism, it's just an observation, right? Everything is so posed in a sense. And everything is so like, oh, this is good for the gram. And that's just not me. That's not how I engage with my life.
But again, that's not podcasting.
It's not podcasting. It's not podcasting. But when you say like, oh, social media, and this is what it means to participate in the 21st century, I think it affords me a sense of privacy that I have that other people don't. Mm. Because they don't expect me to post every week of my life. And then at the same time, it allows me to enjoy my life in a way that's not performative.
Yeah, I guess I like never interact with social media in a way that I think I'm acting how people want me to act. Like, I am very limited in what I do, and I only do it in the hope that I learn something from this and I hope somebody else does.
Yeah.
But I never think that the things I see are things I should aspire to, unless, like, I follow, like, a lot of, like, news stuff and, like, intellectual writers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just have limited my social media view, like, without any sort of this toxicity. But when I went to Prague, it was so unsettling to see people experiencing Prague just to put it on the internet. Like, I agree. Yes. It's so horrible. I hate it. Because I was in Prague and I sat down and I heard, like, the wind going through the trees, and I heard the sound of the Kafka statue turning, and I just was like, this is like something that you could never put anywhere, and yet it means everything to me. I don't want us to lose that, but I also think there is a beauty of social media that is, we can connect with each other no matter how far away we are or who we are. Like, there's a real equality in social media.
So I think I'm always torn, and again, it's not a criticism of how she uses social media.
Her being your roommate?
My roommate, who is much younger than I am. So this is definitely a defining quality of her generation, right? So for instance, when we were in Poland, we had gone back and forth about getting to the top of this mountain. And I'd said, you know, I'm someone who loves to hike. So I'm like, this is dangerous. I don't think we have the equipment. We need to come up with a plan B. And she's like, no, we can do it. We can do it. We end up taking a cable car and we get to the top and we realize, oh, we wouldn't have been prepared to do this. It was super dangerous. Like, we're about to be blown off this mountain.
Oh, that happened to me so many times when I was 23. oh no, but this is not right.
Like, wait, I have underestimated this. Yeah. But I remember sitting here taking photos with her and going out several times. And literally, we're feeling like we are going to be blown off this mountain. And she is over here like, okay, can you lend me your backpack so that I can take the photo? Because I had this Osprey backpack that looks like we've gone hiking into the mountains. And she takes off her hat because it looks better to be in the photo without the hat. And I'm thinking here, as someone who hikes, you know, I don't think of myself as a novice. I think I'm kind of an intermediate hiker. You know, I'm looking at this like, I don't think anyone who has any experience with mountains would think, oh yeah, you definitely went up here without a hat in April when there's this much snow around, right? Early April. There's just so much performance to it. And it's kind of like you post it and you don't say anything to indicate that you took a cable car up. You make other people fill in the blanks.
Yeah, but that's like one point of view. But I feel like as an educator, you could appreciate the educational point of view of it.
You could. So one of my other friends, like, that's the other thing. One of my other friends is really great at making genuine connections and really making genuine opportunities off of Instagram. It's very, very notable. But I think that she is the exception to the rule. I feel like most people do not use Instagram in this way.
Hmm.
Right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's a tool. It's neither good nor bad. It depends on how you use it. Also, like,
somebody selecting the algorithm stuff for you. I very mindfully have to cheat the algorithm to see the things I want to see.
Earlier in the pandemic, I was taking a happiness course with a bunch of my friends.
From where? Who gave it?
Yale University. It's
I read about this. Yes.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I've learned from there, and I've seen it in other places as well, that social media actually really doesn't make you happy. And so I think there have been times, and I've been like, maybe as an artsy kind of thing, I'll do doner kebab, you know, like me in a reindeer outfit eating doner and quoting Nietzsche, because the world is absurd and nothing matters, right?
To me, that's like what social media is all about.
Doner kebab, that's a doner kebab, you know? But just listening to the scientific research and them saying, no, this really doesn't make you happy, I've not been compelled to go out and join social media.
Yeah, I definitely understand, like, the dopamine cycle about it, but what about Francis, Chris, what about you guys? Because you guys don't really participate.
Francis used to participate a lot in social media. He used to post every day.
And you stole all of his Facebook points.
I think one thing that I have struggled with was, like, this past year, I've been, like, really struggling with depression and, like, not really feeling, like, the best of myself. And I've been wanting to post something about it, but then not feeling like I could or should or really even wanting to. But, like, on the opposite end of that, you could post the good things about yourself. Mm. And it's, like, that's the only thing you can ever really post on social media is, like, the best things, but never really the worst things or the real things.
I mean, they're all real things.
Like, when you're feeling down or feeling bad about yourself, like, you can never feel like it's good to post on social media about it.
Right. Well, I feel like people do, but they've already gotten past it. They're like, right. I felt horrible for the past 3 months, and like, this is what happened.
Like when you're in the middle of it and posting something that's like super depressing or super down, that's just not something you see.
I remember in the early days of social media when people would post things like that, right? Back in the early days when there was no filter for anyone. I remember seeing posts like that and thinking, oh, you're such an attention whore. You're only doing this so that people will say something and be like, no, it's not like that. It's not like that. And that's such a callous view on it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I feel like there's also like a socioeconomic feeling about, like, I read things from people from like my home state or whatever, and they're way, way more open about like the ups and downs. You're like, how dare they use Facebook like this? And that's like a very...
Right.
Pointed socioeconomic point of view about it.
Yeah. And also cultural, I think. A friend of mine who's doing his PhD in New York, he's German. He was telling me that he was depressed for such a long time because he felt like with Americans, they would always ask you, how are you, how are you, how are you? And they expect to hear something positive. Oh, I'm great. I'm good. Everything's fine. They don't really care how you are because if you say something negative, it's like, oh... Oh, like this wasn't what I was expecting, and they're not ready for that kind of answer. Yeah. They're not ready for that conversation.
And I've been trying very hard to give honest answers about that, like for the past 6 months or something. Like, I'm okay, but like I'm struggling with this.
Yeah.
You know, and just because I feel like if somebody's doing me the favor of asking me, I should give them an honest answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a coworker, we have weekly tag ups, and he was just like, oh, you know, how's things going? I was like, yeah, I'm not feeling the greatest. Like, I feel like not great. And he immediately just glazed over it and then just kind of switched topics. Like, it's hard when people don't hear the normal, like, oh, I'm doing okay, how are you? You know? But then, you know, like, actually the next week he actually did follow up, was like, yeah, are you doing okay? Like, are you feeling fine? But, you know, like, I think, like, it just catches people off guard when they hear that. And it's not something that they expect. Because, like, here, it's just, like, the normal. Yeah.
I mean, with coworkers, I wouldn't tell them anything about me. With my friends, I would probably try and be a bit more honest. Because who else am I going to get support from, you know?
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, I expect no support from my coworkers.
No, that's such a I don't know. I guess I'm trying to find the balance now
with your coworkers.
Yeah, so the majority of my coworkers are Italian, and in that culture, I can be here talking about my kids and my wife and my husband, and you know, and if I don't, it's considered super cold.
Yeah.
So the fact that, oh, you've been going through all these things and you haven't said anything, it's like, you really hate us. Like, what is this?
The thing about coworkers is you actually spend more time with them than you do your, like, your friends or your family or even your spouse sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they are the people you see the most.
Yeah.
And so it's weird that you section off a part of your time or part of your life with them.
But this, like, coming from you, who really used to second off a part of your time.
Yeah, his coworkers didn't even know that he was gay until...
What?
Yeah, no, but because it's so weird. Like, because I would prefer not to... And part of it's been like my own ambition. Like I would love to just excel and just be okay and do my work and just be good at my work without having to worry about like, oh, my coworker over here is getting a divorce and so is doing like XYZ, but this other one is not doing well with their other coworker, and like having to deal with like interpersonal drama. I just want to do other things.
But realistically, do you think that that's the case? Like, can you separate out these big emotional but events?
No, I don't think it's realistic. And that's why I struggle with it.
Yeah.
I mean, like my friend Carrie is a great friend of mine. I love her to death. But when we were working together, like it just kind of complicated our work dynamic. Like when we're just coworkers, it just complicates it. In my current job, which I've been at for 5.5 years, I don't think I'm super close, like not the same level of closeness as I was with Carrie. It allows me to be really good at my work, but it also allows me to be very divorced from my work, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I would love a work situation where you could just be like, hey, I am really struggling with a personal issue right now, so I can't be 110% at this. Because I got something else going on. Like, it's not forever. Yeah. It's not always. If it was, I would talk to my manager and address, like, talking about working at an accommodation or something. But just for a little while, I need some grace in this. And so, like, it is hard to draw that line of being, like, I can't be at this level, but it's not forever.
Yeah.
There's a human element that people need to add into it. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to divorce that human element from the personal element.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so how do you develop that human connection with someone without being vulnerable? How do you develop that human connection without being your authentic self in a role? And that encompasses so much more than just what you do in an Excel spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. That's more than what you do in an Outlook email. And for me, I've always had that difficulty in separating the two. And so I think one of my strengths at work is being that vulnerable person that's bringing my personal life to work sometimes. And so I'm much more open with my colleagues about who I am, who I'm with, what I'm doing. And it has its downsides, but I think in the end it's more positive because I do connect with my colleagues on a much deeper level. So that if I were to have some, to your point, if I were to have something that's going on in my life, they're like, no, I get it. I know you. This is what you bring to your work. And so we're going to give you that leeway.
I also think it's so important for you to do that as a, I don't want to call you out, but as a white male.
I agree with this. Yeah.
It is so important for you to do that because it gives everyone else who are maybe a little differently privileged or less privileged, gives them the opportunity to do it too.
Right. And I think being a white male versus being non-white male, it's viewed in a different way. I had a very similar conversation with my coworker when I wasn't doing okay for such a long time. And it was this thing. He just always thought that I was always mad at him. And he just went like, oh, of course, women are just mad for no reason. Instead of just outright asking me, is there something that's wrong? What's the matter? I mean, I did tell him explicitly, this is not about you. There are just so many things going on in my life right now. I don't have the emotional capacity to be this happy, bubbly person. A part of it, of course, is we're coming from two very different cultures. So he's like, but what is the real message here? You know, like,
it's not about you.
I just said it.
Yeah, it's like, there must be something else. I'm like, no, man, I cannot expect you to read my mind. So I don't know why when, you know, anytime we've had these issues, I've always confronted them head on. Why do you think that this is any different? I think as the only woman in my workspace, it's been like, but really, what are you really saying? Because women never tell us directly what they mean or what they want or...
Or she must be on her period.
Yeah, yeah.
When our grandmother died, I remember coming back to work. I had to take 2 weeks off because, you know, like she died in the Philippines. And so I had to take 2 weeks off. And so U.S. bereavement is only like 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then I had to take the rest off for PTO. When I came back, my manager was like, oh, did you have a nice vacation? And I was just like, I didn't have a vacation. I went to my grandmother's funeral in the Philippines. And that was that. Like, he didn't say anything, but it's just like, you know, you would never say that to somebody else. Like, I went to the Philippines, and just because your image of the Philippines is like Boracay or some resort doesn't mean that's where I went. Like, yeah. I went to the Philippines.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it's just
I just thought about, like, they were like, oh, he was gone for so long, couldn't be for a funeral.
I never delved into it, but that was my take on it. He was gone for 2 weeks. He went to the Philippines.
Gallivanting around the Philippines. Yeah.
And I think one thing that might have tipped him off was like, oh, I took a picture of my parents in like a restaurant, and they themselves were like doing the family politics of trying to seem happy, and they took a picture, like a selfie of us. But that means nothing. Like, they took a picture of us in the Philippines in a restaurant during 2 weeks where a normal person might grieve and have a range of emotions. I'm allowed to do this, and you're not allowed to tell me that I went on a vacation for two weeks. Like, that's not something you can tell me.
But it comes back to this thing that I was saying before about social media, is that oftentimes it's performative, and the image that we're portraying or the message that people receive has nothing to do with the actual reality behind the image. I think especially in your case, it has implications in real life.
Yeah.
But I think the user error is not in the poster, but in the like receiver, whatever, you know.
Huh?
That's why you shouldn't be connected with your coworkers on social media.
Oh my gosh.
That's a double-edged sword. Like, I mean, it's both ways. Like, yes, you can take it in the sense that, oh, I'm only seeing the positive image of this person. So that my assumption is that they're going through a positive time. But then the poster is also like, I only feel like I can post the positive images.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of the self-reinforcing.
Yeah, they're all building on each other.
And neither one is the incorrect response, but it is the way that social media has developed to force us to respond. Like, that's a terrible thing to say, but you can almost imagine like why it's understandable why they think that based on both the culture of how Americans take vacation, and we call it vacation.
I mean, to be fair though, my boss, who is European, also said the same thing about me coming back now, and I'm like, how can I possibly be on vacation? Everyone around me is working. I don't know what you think I'm doing.
Yeah,
you know?
This is not fun pacing in my
brother's
house.
I'm just thinking in the U.S. Thank you. Yeah.
But I know this all came from me asking which of my episodes was your favorite. This really led to a
because the answer
was
she has not
everything.
Heard one, so the answer is null.
Yeah,
and that was your final question.
Yeah, I told you I only had four.
And look, it goes so far.
Catherine, which one would you recommend Donica listen to for her first Catherine HQAF radio?
Oh, I like the Newlywed Game.
That's a good one. Yeah. When Francis falls up the stairs.
Honestly, yes. my favorite part of that episode is Alana is completely
oblivious
to the swingers joke.
Yeah.
No, I win that too.
yeah. Or like, I was like very blatantly like, this isn't a real game. You can win.
You must please me.
By just being nice to me.
Yeah.
And it took until the last question for anybody to be nice to me.
Aww.
We were not.
They were just
not
playing.
Nice.
And I was like, you can sway my decision by like making me feel nice, by flattering me. Oh, I do like the Animal Crossing episodes too.
So, shall we finish this out?
Oh, sure. What's the closing?
Okay. So, Catherine, how was your first time meeting Donica? Has it met your expectations?
Oh, exceeded expectations. It's been so fun.
She had very low expectations.
Donica was just a skipping machine before.
I didn't understand what that was, and now I do.
Even though she hasn't experienced it firsthand,
but I
and
will.
There are differing opinions about the intensity of the frequency of the skip.
I mean, if you want to demonstrate,
you can't just call upon it.
Frances, that's not how it works.
I would never ask her to expose that part of herself on cam.
Yeah, it's something that even my roommates are always like, oh, you do it too?
Okay, again, this is not a Donica skipping podcast, though.
I know. Why do we keep reverting back?
We learned so many beautiful things about Donica, and we're back to this. I hate this.
I did not turn into this.
I feel like a two-dimensional character.
You literally did. You said, how do you feel about Donica skipping now that you've heard from her?
Okay, I'm going to rewind this. I will to you, I did not even say that. I said, how do you feel about Donica? That's all.
And her skip, now that you know about her skipping.
I didn't say that.
Yes, you did.
I did not say that.
All right, let's move on.
Okay, let's.
Donica, how about the other way around? How do you feel about Catherine?
Oh, it's so great meeting Catherine. I didn't know what to expect going into this before. Actually, my good friend and I were discussing this before over coffee, and I was like, I really don't know what to expect because I'm only told what you've told me, right? And I've met Catherine over Animal Crossing.
And Jackbox.
And, you know, like, they cannot really fully encompass Catherine as a person.
Thank you.
It's like having a first date at a movie.
Like having a blind date, right? It's like, oh, they're great, and they're like this and this and this and this, and it's just like, okay, but you're going to the movie, and you don't really get to experience that fully, and yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting, because this entire time, I've had this two-dimensional image of Catherine as a person, and now we get to flesh it out and really discover who Catherine is.
I noticed you didn't say that you liked me, though.
I do like her.
You were like, I learned who she was.
As I was discussing with my one friend, and having been in a very casual relationship with a French person, things are just very implied, whereas Americans are very explicit about what they say. I'm learning to go between. I do really enjoy you as a person, Catherine. I enjoy you too.
I feel like, though, as a Tan family tree, Donica and I are very guarded about our own feelings. So
this is true.
We all also love to play chill, so it's just...
Yeah, I was very ready to say how much I like Donica without her ever telling me.
And I would just be like, yes, you do like me. Over my mug, like, yes, this makes sense.
Thank you.
You are...
This makes sense.
Well, thank you guys for this very entertaining episode. Donica, in 6 months, when you come back for your booster, and we can have another episode.
Episode two.
Also, Donica and I are going to go hiking together in Europe. So.
Yes. Exactly. Yes.
We'll try and record, except it'll just be like this.
Outside of long
just me, like, huffing.
You'll be at the base of the mountain and be like, well, can I borrow your backpack, Donica?
But we can be sure that Donica will not listen to that episode.
How dare you, Chris? I follow them on Spotify now.
Donica, last question. What episode of HQAF have you listened to?
Part of the wedding.
her part of the wedding.
The one that Chris made you listen to.
Though I have shared it with 3 friends.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
It is a good episode.
So technically she's listened to 4 of them. She's responsible for 4 listens.
Wow. Shook it.
That's it for our show, folks. I'm your host, Francis Tan. Follow us on our Instagram at hkaf.productions. We post every other week. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. And until next time, the best ship to sail on is friendship.